This podcast is being sponsored by MyComicShop.com. Come visit us at ColdSlitherPodcast.com and then click on the link through our front page to MyComicShop.com. Shop there and keep the podcast going free. And you'll get new releases of comic books delivered right to your door. MyComicShop.com through ColdSlitherPodcast.com. Do it today. The following is a presentation of the Cold Slither Podcast Network.
Welcome to another exciting episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles. I'm your host, Tim D-O-double-G. Yay! And tonight I'm joined by the man behind the sound effects. His name is @agent_70 on Twitter.
What's up, everybody?
We've also got @PCN_dirt on Twitter.
Hi, guys.
Blowing kisses to the crowd.
That's right.
Check out his website, popculturenetwork.com. And our co-host who is not here tonight, go to his Twitter, @RoddyCat, and follow his news feed of information Twitter account, @NewsNerdsNeed. And while you're going to things, make sure to go to theclicknation.com where you can find previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles and comic book reviews. Follow the Twitter account @TheClickNation. Like the Facebook fan page, facebook.com/TheClickNation. As dirt, I was going to say, that's not a, it looks like a Christmas ornament.
It's a Minecraft keychain. Courtesy of my kids. This is the Moo Shroom. It's a cow with mushrooms.
Let's see. Add us to your circles on Google Plus. Search for the Click Nation, like the Google Plus page.
I'm done.
Subscribe to us on YouTube, youtube.com/TheClickNation. Also subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Search for the Click Nation. Give us 5-star reviews. Give us reviews, period. I need to check and see if we have any on there. Give us, thumbs up on Stitcher and reshare us. Use the hashtag Comic Book Chronicles on your favorite social media websites. We are a member of the Coast of the Podcast and Comic Related Podcasting Networks. Go to their websites, coastlitterpodcast.com and comicrelated.com. We record live every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. So if you're at home, go ahead and give us the pleasure of turning us on in the background as you're doing other stuff. Even try listening for a change.
Or watching. Watching is good.
Or watching. And speaking of the Cold Slither Podcast, I want to shout out some of the other podcasts on the Cold Slither Podcast Network, the Crown and Collard Show. They have the Good and Terrible Show, Classic Team Up, Crown and Collards, and much more. Cold Slither Podcast.
Yay! You'll be joining us soon.
As you'll hear in the intro, if you're listening to the podcast version. Alrighty.
Which always goes up Friday mornings.
Yeah, see, Classic's actually good. He has like a schedule of like, Monday is going to be this, you know, podcast show. Tuesday, this one.
Every Friday, you know, you open up your favorite podcasting app, and there is our show. It's pretty cool.
I need to get on the schedule of every Friday, this show will go up. Maybe I'll start that tomorrow.
New Year's resolutions, late February.
And since I'm doing stuff as on the top of my mind, if you happen to be in Macon, Georgia this weekend, I will be at the Middle Georgia Comic Book Convention.
That's freaking awesome.
Local artists will be there. Most notably, I think Van Jensen, the Green Lantern Corps writer, will be there. I'd name some others, but he's the only one that comes off the top of my mind right now. Maybe before the show ends, I'll pull up the website and write off some more names. But for now, we're going to jump straight to our cinematic comic book news of the week, courtesy of our man Roddy Cat for assembling the news for this week and every week.
Roddy Cat.
Gina Carano was cast as Angel Dust in the Deadpool movie. So she jumps from dying in Fast and Furious 6 to starring in Deadpool as a lower tier comic book character, but we'll see how big of a role she plays in the Deadpool movie.
Yeah, who is Angel Dust?
Yeah, that was my reaction.
Someone, comicbook.com, I think, had a link saying who she was. She's a Morlock, I think.
Really? Why didn't they just cast her as Callisto? Or did they already cast Callisto in the X-Men movies?
In Last Stand, she was in it.
Oh, she was? Okay.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
And Dania Ramirez was her. Storm was finding. Storm fought a lot.
Okay. I don't remember the movie. I don't remember it being any, you know.
They never said her by name, I don't think. I think in the credits, you only saw her name.
Oh, okay.
Let's see. So, also in Deadpool news, Colossus is rumored to be making an appearance in it, but it will not be played by the person that played Colossus in the X-Men franchise of movies.
Right, Daniel Cudmore, I think his name is. So.
Yes. And also in Deadpool news, Marina Baccarin, now it's female lead in Deadpool. Yes, it was brought up last week, but has now been confirmed via Roddy Cat. And people know her from, Dragon Firefly and something else? And she's in Gotham right now as Dr. Leslie Tompkins.
Right. I think she was on Homeland also.
Yes, Homeland was the other one. I knew there was some big cult following shows, Firefly and Homeland.
There you go.
Space Ghost voice actor Gary Owens passes away at age 80. Rest in peace to him.
Yes, rest in peace.
Suicide Squad cast RoboCop star Joel Kinnaman as Rick Flag. Is that the guy that played RoboCop?
Maybe. Dirt?
Probably.
I think so. Here, hold on a second. Yes.
So, there's your replacement for Tom Hardy. What else do we have? Friday Night Lights. Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, he was also in the TV show The Killing. Okay. You've heard about that. That's been one of those cult shows also.
Right.
Friday Night Lights, Jay Hernandez to join Suicide Squad in unspecified role. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. elevates Adrian Palicki to series regular.
Yay!
Fans petition DreamWorks to replace Scarlett Johansson for live-action Ghost in the Shell. Won't go anywhere.
I understand where they're coming from.
They want to replace her?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They want a Japanese actress, or at least an Asian actress, to play. I forget the character's name now. It's been a while since I've read anything Ghost in the Shell.
Yeah, I was going to say, I remember watching the original video back in the late 90s, but...
I remember reading the manga in the mid-90s, so...
Well,
it's funny.
There was some voice casting announcements in the Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy animated series. Will Friedle will be voicing Star-Lord, and David Sobolov as Drax.
Okay.
And Kevin Michael Richardson and Trevor Duvall also join the cast.
All right.
I believe. Oh,
Will Friedle is...
Boy Meets World.
Yeah.
So he will be your Star-Lord, the legendary variety.
Star-Lord, man.
Let me click the link to see who Kevin Richardson and them are playing. Oh, so actually some more. Let's see. Vanessa Marshall will play Gamora. Her past credits include Star Wars Rebels, Young Justice, and The Grim Adventures of Billy and Mandy.
Vanessa Marcil? Is that M-A-R-C-I-L?
Marshall.
Marshall. Okay.
A little different.
Yeah.
James Arnold Taylor will pull double duty as Yondu and Cosmo.
Cosmo gets to talk in the cartoon? That's awesome. Or at least telepathically.
It's interesting, of course, all these shows want to equal the success of the movies and, bring in the movie audience. So, Avengers Assemble right now, they're dealing with, assembling the Infinity Stones and dealing with Thanos and whatnot. But it's is this series going to keep running up until Infinity War when we actually see Thanos appear? Unless Thanos appears, in, Guardians of the Galaxy 2 or something, to actually fight some people. Or are they just going to keep, putting out, keep using these characters that movie viewers actually won't see in action until like 4 years from now.
Right, but it's priming the pump, you know what I mean? Like, it's definitely laying the groundwork for these characters to be introduced, and there won't necessarily be the who, you know, what is the actor's name from Guardians of the Galaxy?
Jomin.
Yeah, Jaimin Hansu. Yeah. Thank you. Jaimin Hansu. He's like, who? We don't want the entire audience when they're watching Avengers when Thanos finally shows up to say who. So, you know, rather prime the pump there and get people familiar with the character.
I guess that's one way to look at it. Dreadstar comic book to be developed as a scripted series with Jim Starlin.
That's something I never read growing up, although I kept seeing advertisements for it and I saw it in the comic book shop, but I just never picked it up, never got into it. How about you, Dirt?
Say that again. I lost you a little.
Oh, I'm sorry. I fixed the mic. I was just saying that Dreadstar was something that I had always seen advertisements for, and I had seen issues, like random issues in the comic book store growing up, but never picked it up, so I never got into it. How about you?
Yeah, no, it wasn't something that you could find regularly in the local shop. It's like you had to special order it if you wanted to read it, and that's too much work when you're in junior high.
Understood.
I like how you just skipped over me knowing that I knew nothing of Dreadstar.
Dreadstar, because I knew that it predates your comic book fandom.
Was this Dreadstar? What?
Yeah, Dreadstar. You know,
it's like I go straight to 2009. What?
I go straight to my.
Hey, you can go 90s.
Age wise, exactly. No, Dreadstar is definitely 80s.
All right.
Well, they recast Nightcrawler.
Yeah, so I'll skip. Cody Smith McPhee is Nightcrawler in X-Men Apocalypse.
Yeah, they're definitely skewing younger. All right.
We lost him?
I don't know. Possibly. He's frozen on my screen.
Yep. All right, what's the next piece of news?
Doug Jones is going to play DC Comics villain Deathbolt. Who on earth is Deathbolt?
Deathbolt.
Who is Deathbolt, Doug? Dirt.
You know, I'm going to have to click that link because I have no idea.
Oh, it's an Arrow character. Deathbolt. It sounds like an Image character, doesn't it?
Deathbolt.
Yeah. He's an actual DC Comics villain?
Oh. Wow. He appeared in All-Star Squadron 21 in 1983.
Oh, good God. Holy cow.
So they're starting to run low on stuff.
They're really scraping, you know, I hate to bring up, I think this is the second cliche thing I've said in the last 5 minutes. They're scraping the bottom of the barrel with this one. Holy cow.
Although, I love the comments on IGN. One of the first ones that appears is, what about Solomon Grundy?
Wow. Well,
that's a good point.
Why bring up Solomon Grundy, though? Just because he's a character that hasn't been done?
Because he's not a guy who appeared in All-Star Squadron 21 in 1983. I mean, that's...
Yeah. Oh, you know what? I wonder if Solomon Grundy hadn't already appeared in the show. Because I think the point that they're trying to make is that he was a metahuman. And I think the headline is kind of blaring out that this is the first metahuman to show up on Arrow, other than, I guess, The Flash?
I don't know. You got me.
Could be. Well, anyway.
All right, Tim, are you back?
Tim, are you unfrozen?
Am I?
Oh, you're back.
Your eyes blinking. There you go.
You're back. We hear you.
Yeah, I could hear y'all the entire time.
Oh, okay. No, man, it's a good thing we didn't say anything untoward.
But it must be on my side.
Continuing mic problems, maybe.
Testing?
We got you.
Hello?
Loud and clear.
Okay. Feel free to keep reading the news.
All righty.
Well, Constantine apparently is not canceled. A decision on the second season to be made in May after the season ends.
Wow.
So apparently they're going to let it wrap before they decide on another year. You know, my problem with modern TV is the fact that I don't watch most of it live.
Right.
Most of it I watch on delay, either on demand or I wait for it to hit Netflix a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
So when they say people aren't watching the show, it's like, well, people may not be watching it now, but give it 6 months, give it some legs, put it out on some of the platforms, and then see if you can get a following on it. Because Constantine is one that I just kind of fell behind on,
right.
But I would like to watch it. And once it hits, you know, someplace where I can sit down and watch the episodes, then I will. But since I don't have a DVR anymore to record stuff, I have to wait until it's, you know, it recycles through on demand and I can watch it the second time it shows up, or I have to wait for it to show up on Netflix.
Right. Right. So, you know, at least with on demand, you're probably approximately a week behind, maybe. You know, well, like,
if
you keep up with it, I mean.
Yeah, generally what happens is there's only like 3, maybe 4 episodes on demand.
Right.
So if you miss a month, by the time you go in to try to watch it, the one you've missed has already dropped off and another one has taken its spot.
Right.
So you either have to skip that one, or you have to wait until the entire season runs through, and then they start replaying the season over the summer.
Right.
And then when they replay it, they'll cycle back through in the back of the on-demand.
Gotcha.
So I'll have to wait until Constantine basically ends the season, and then it'll start showing up again after the last episode. The first episode will pop back up on demand. So then I have to wait for the week after that for the next episode, and then I can start following up on it that way.
Gotcha. All righty.
So that's it for the cinema news, right?
All right.
Comic news. There's an audio file or of some kind that you can listen to the Howard Duck's adventures. Howard the Duck adventures.
All right.
Yeah, IDW announces a hard.
I was just gonna say it's one of Marvel's new audio ventures. They're trying to do like these audio comics, what's it called? It's called graphic audio. That's what it's called. And the idea is that they're trying to make videos where they do narration and sound effects for the comics. So either you would read the comic and listen to the voices actually being said out loud, or you just don't bother with the comic and you just hear it like a radio play, which to me, either way, seems like a really bad idea. But nonetheless, they're trying it.
They're all in.
I don't get it, but whatever.
All right.
And as we have IDW announces a hardcover collection for Alex Toth's Bravo for Adventure.
Okay.
There's Earth's Mightiest Heroes take on their greatest foes in Avengers Versus, which is similar to the AVX Avenger. Was it AVX Versus?
Yeah. I think that's
the name of it. Except this is like the animated Adventures World Versus.
Right.
So it's sort of, I believe it.
Oh, we lost him again. Tim, you're a black screen, and we can't hear you.
Oh, my goodness. I love it.
Now I can see a frozen picture of Tim talk. Nope, we went black again.
I love it. All right, I guess we'll keep on keeping on with the new comic news. Where do we stop? Are we on solicits? Yes, we are on solicits. We have a bunch of solicits.
Max Bemis from the band Say Anything has a new book coming out from Arkea, which is now part of Boom Studios, called Oh Kill Strike, which I guess might mean something more if you listen to Say Anything and Max Bemis, but whatever.
There you go.
He did Evil Empire with Boom.
Alrighty.
Secret Wars is bringing back the Old Man Logan universe. In fact, they was it All New X-Men last week? Was that where they made the appearance of
yes.
Old Man Logan?
Yeah. I believe so, because that was one of the realities that they were randomly trying. You know, they were doing almost a random draw
right.
to see what reality they were going to try to jump back into,
right.
And they saw the Old Man Logan. I believe it was Ben Grimm, the Thing, facing off with Old Man Logan.
Right, so he's going to come back for Secret Wars and part of the Battle World, I'm guessing.
Interesting.
We got Comic-Con registration beginning
yes.
online February 21st.
Yes.
And
are you registering?
No, not through this. If I do it, I'll do it through press. But I mean,
gotcha.
But what they're doing is like they're opening it for an hour where you register to get like a
into
code
the queue.
Word. Yeah, to get like a key.
Oh, okay.
Whatever. And then once you have that key, then that registration closes, and then a different registration will open, and you can go in any time in 2 weeks and put in your key. And then you can do your full registration. So you basically have an hour to jump online, crash their servers, and try to get the key or the code or whatever it is so that you can get back later and actually register. So maybe it's not going to crash because they're only doing it for an hour or whatever, so they've got a whole bunch of computers lined up to take care of it.
Dirt, I don't want to go off on too big a tangent, but I wanted to get your take on ticket sales for big cons and just you know, what how the system has gotten so overwhelmed by demand that they just haven't been able to come up with more efficient ways to sell tickets. I can tell you from my experience with New York Comic Con, I don't know if it's the same for C2E2. I know you also do, you know, you get your passes through through press for Pop Culture Network, but just maybe from, you know, anecdotal evidence, you know, from your customers and from friends and colleagues, you know, they really haven't been able to keep up with demand for tickets, and they're still looking for ways to make it efficient and make it less painful. I can tell you that, you know, it's just been a real S show. That's the most, you know, safer work way I can put it. It's been a real S show when it comes to New York Comic Con tickets, you know, buying them online. All I hear is nightmare stories, and I'm wondering, you know, what you think about, you know, Comic-Con's becoming this much more popular that, you know, they can't keep up with demand and ticket sales, or at least coming up with a mode for ticket sales to keep up.
Honestly, I think, you know, one of the big kerfluffles of the last year was the cosplay and how that is generating so many problems with these conventions. And a lot of people do buy tickets just so that they can show up in their costume and get their picture taken. And right. It almost makes me feel like there needs to be some sort of separate crossover area for cosplay, where maybe, like, Artist Alley is in one section in the middle that everybody can get into.
Right.
And then you've got your vendors and your sales stuff over on one side, and that's your con ticket. You can get to the publisher booths and all that stuff. And then you have the second ticket that gets you into the Artist Alley and then maybe into just kind of like some sort of general photography area with a bunch of right. backdrops and, you know, interview booths and whatever. Right. And so people who want to go to the Marvel booth and get some swag and go to the DC booth and have Scott Snyder sign their books and do that stuff are in a separate area, separate crowd, separate line, and the people that just want to show off the Azrael Batman costume that they made yeah. could be in a different area, and you don't have to sell the same tickets to everybody.
I see.
You know
I was
what I
trying
mean?
To figure out where you were going with that, because ultimately I was, you know, I'm still frustrated. I can sense the frustration from fans, and, you know, coming from my point of view, where yes, we're still building up the Comic Book Chronicles, we're still building up our reputation online and in the comic book community. So, you know, yes, you know, we don't necessarily have like the guaranteed press pass yet. But I noticed I said yet. But you know, so
I do.
You know,
I do.
Well,
though.
I know you do. We're working on it still. So, but as I was saying, I'm still reliant on the individual ticket for now.
Yeah.
And I sense that, you know, I know having missed out on New York Comic Con tickets once, going to special edition for the express, you know, like one of the big reasons I even got special edition tickets was because I would be able to get my New York Comic Con ticket there. And this year they put extra restrictions on it, because they understand now that that's why a lot of people went to New York to special edition to get New York Comic Con tickets. Right. So when I bought my special edition ticket, I noticed that they put special restrictions up. You know, it's basically you're able to purchase one New York Comic Con ticket per special edition ticket.
Right.
Well, that's a way for them to keep up with the demand. So, you know, that's one way to restrict it. And, you know, a little bit of trial and error doesn't hurt. I understand.
Yeah, and part of the idea is of what I'm saying is that there are people that want to go for a social aspect of it, but they don't necessarily want to dig in bins for old toys. They're not looking for back issues.
Right.
They're not trying to get a Mike Mignola hardcover. You right. know, they're just there to see their friends and show off and take photos and whatever.
Right, so, see what other people are wearing, too.
Right, right. So I almost feel like that should be kind of the convention within the convention, where maybe you have certain areas of the show floor that overlap, but for the most part, you've got certain people over here and you've got certain people over here, and it's a way that they're all at the same event. You know, you walk out in the lobby, you can still see everybody, whatever.
Right.
Because the way these conventions are, they're always in some huge hall.
Right.
You know, you've got a gigantic lobby, you've got the space out in front of the building, you've got huge, you know, elevated walkways and the panel rooms and all that kind of stuff. So
right.
they could break things up a little bit so that people that specifically care about one particular thing can buy a ticket for that, and people who specifically care about something else can buy a ticket for that. And then the overlap areas of the, you know, the panels. You know, you go listen to Mark Waid talk about writing comics for 60 minutes. You know, that stuff can overlap
right.
that you wouldn't necessarily have to worry about.
That's an interesting take on it. I, you know, my fear that comes with this sort of system is I don't necessarily want to pigeonhole certain people into kind of being restricted to certain parts of the con. I like the idea that one ticket gets you into everything.
Well, don't think of it as being you're restricted. It's more along the lines of you have a specialized area.
I see.
So there's a specialized area for these people. There's a specialized area. And maybe there would be like one pass to rule them all.
Right.
That gets you into anything and everything. And of course,
right. So you have to pay extra for that. Right. You pay extra for that and you pay. And that will obviously sell out sooner if that's what gets you into everything. I look at it from the sports fan's point of view. You know, there's always a limited supply of tickets. And getting to, or even, you know, like for people who go to concerts, there's always a limited supply of tickets. And one of the big things that I've heard from fans of musicians who go on tour is that, you know, Ticketmaster and the secondary ticket market on StubHub and other related sites have gotten so that, you know, sometimes it's either ridiculously easy or ridiculously hard to get tickets that are especially high in demand. So, you know, I'm wondering if at some point New York Comic Con will come up, or just the Comic Cons in general, come up with a way to, you know, not have their systems crash, to not be overwhelmed by the ticket demand, and to be able to get tickets to as many people as they can before selling out, so that it doesn't get to be this big hassle that everyone just complains about year after year. You know, I'm just going to leave it at that, and just I'm hoping that at some point they come up with a system that you can't please everybody, but hopefully you piss off the people as possible.
Yeah, well, and part of the problem with that is that demand always fluctuates every year.
Right.
And part of it's going to depend on who you have there, and part of it's going to depend on what weekend it is and how that works for people. And
true enough.
You know, something like C2E2, sometimes it's in late March, sometimes it's in early April, so that makes a difference with a lot of people. So I think what a lot of it comes to is just the fact that these shows grow.
Right.
And every year they think it's going to grow by X, and it tends to grow X plus one.
Right.
And so that's why they have that problem. And especially if you're talking about something like New York and you're trying to get convention hall space, you know, it's a pretty penny. If you overestimate and you get, you know, a 1,000 extra square feet, I mean, that's going to be a huge amount of money in downtown New York. So that's something that you really have to be careful with when you're, you know, attempting to put one of these conventions together.
Right. Right, I'll leave it at that. I was just going to say that, you know, with New York, it's now about trying to cram as many people as they can into the entirety of Jacob Javits, and now Jacob Javits is kind of overwhelmed by the crowd, you know?
Right.
So, but that anyway.
Well, one thing that's been nice about C2E2 is where it's been at, because the location it's at is, it's a giant convention center, but it's actually a convention complex.
Right.
So one year it was kind of in the back hall, and then the next year, because it had grown bigger, it was in the front hall, and then the next year they moved it across the hall to the other side that had more room. So it's just kind of one of those things where the location it's at allows for a lot more flexibility. But you're not going to have that necessarily in downtown San Diego, you know, trying to find that extra flexibility like you can in a place like Chicago.
Gotcha. All righty. Tim, you're back with us?
Can y'all hear me?
Yay! Yep. Were you able to hear our discussion on ticket offerings and ticket sales for these cons and all that? Tim?
Oh, no.
Oh, we lost him again. All right, moving on.
Yeah.
Wow.
Am I the only one? Okay, no, I'm not the only one that lost him.
No, I don't hear him either. Dirt, you're with me. Let's ride.
He was just it out.
Let us ride. All the solicitation stuff for May. Let's start with these announcements. So Marvel promises the reveal of Thor's secret identity and more in May. I'm looking forward to this. The new Thor by Jason Aaron and Russell Dauterman has been very good, but I am anxious to find out who it is that is wielding Mjolnir at this point.
Yeah, and we're still dealing with Secret Wars stuff, aren't we?
Yes. Secret Wars, the next the next big thing that we find out is spinning out of Secret Wars is a new Infinity Gauntlet series.
Ay.
Yeah, seriously. You know, everything old is new again, especially with, remember what I was saying earlier about priming the pump for the future Infinity Gauntlet movies.
Oh, and that's right. We're getting the Secret Origins of Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver.
Yep.
Now that their history is being completely rewritten.
We'll see if that's really the case, but I'm inclined to agree with you.
I don't know. Doing the ordering, I was working on the order today for the stores, and we're working on the first month worth of Convergence stuff for DC.
Okay.
And now I'm looking at the list of the next month's worth of stuff for Convergence, and it's so... this is going to be so tough for us to deal with at our store because it goes back and forth between New 52, pre-New 52, pre-Crisis, all these different characters, all these different time periods. There are some people that only care about the New 52 stuff, that they only started reading comics because of the New 52. They're not going to care about any of this stuff. But right. There are other people who, like, they're Flash fans, and so we know that they're going to want to pick up a book like Speed Force. So you're going to have regular Flash, but then you're also going to have the Speed Force books. They're going to be willing to pick it up. But then you've got some of these books like The Atom. The Atom is coming back. There is no current book on the market for The Atom of the DC Universe where you can just say, oh, we'll give it to all of those people.
Right.
You know, you can take Adventures of Superman and give it to all the Superman and Action Comics people because sure. Adventures of Superman, it's Superman for, you know, those guys. But The Atom, there's nothing that I can look at that say, oh, well, these are the people that would want copies of The Atom. We have to kind of look through subscribers and actually kind of pick at their personalities and be like, well, are they going to care about this? Are they going to want this? You know, if someone's reading current Batgirl, they don't necessarily care about pre-New 52 Batgirl, you know, because it means nothing to them. Some of these books like Titans, you know, Titans kind of ties into Teen Titans, but a lot of the people reading Teen Titans now are reading it because of the, you know, young age skew that it has nowadays is trying to be hip and cool right. for the younger readers, and it doesn't, you know, it doesn't tie into that. It doesn't make sense to try to give that to any of those people. So it's really been a nightmare going through the stuff and trying to figure out how many to order of these books. And I have a feeling it's going to be that way. If there are any gems in here that a lot of people are going to want, they're going to be really hard to find because I don't think a lot of these books are going to be ordered in the same numbers that they get ordered in now. And right. some of these books like Superboy, with the old, you know, kid from the Death and Return of Superboy, right. where he's wearing the leather jacket,
mm-hmm.
the earring, you know, so many people are going to look at that nowadays and be like, oh, God. Like,
right, it's back. Can't believe it. Quick yeah. question for you, Dirt.
Mm-hmm.
Do you participate in Comixology? Does the store participate with Comixology? If you create a pull list on Comixology, does it link to the store?
No.
Okay, why not?
We've looked into it before, but okay. there's the system that we use for doing pull lists is not compatible with the system that they use.
Okay.
So someone could go to Comixology, print out their list, and bring it to us, and then we could manually work it over.
Got it.
But there's no automatic.
So I'm just going to work off of the presumption that you either use previews or you just have like a list that people give you every, you know, every once in a while. Say I need to pull all Spidey titles or all right. X-Men titles.
Yeah. Okay. Someone will say I want all the Romita Superman books, or right. they go I want Green Lantern and all the Green Lantern tie-in books right. and everything that goes with them.
Right. And you also use, you know, like if someone comes in with the previews all checked off and whatnot, you'll do that also.
Yeah, we try to keep one up at the counter.
Right.
And if people want to, they can kind of flip through it and be like, oh, give me this, give me that. You know,
gotcha. So then, I mean, what I was going to recommend is that, you know, if you do like online pull listing or something like that, or you could even like send out an email to your subscribers and say, look, you know, for the sake of convergence, you know, make sure you get you fill out what you want to pull so that you know what you need to order. It's a little harder to do it, you know, kind of like the old school way, which is, you know, you gotta have to estimate, you know, beyond what people are pulling, because it doesn't, unless you have like the really faithful pull listers who are looking at the convergence list and say, I want this, you know?
The problem is that for the most part, what we see with a lot of, like there are a lot of the, what we consider the old school guys, people like me, probably people like you, that
right.
know what characters they like, what books they want, and they just say, pull me that every month.
Right.
But there are a lot of people that come in and they go, I like Harley Quinn and Arrow on TV.
Mm.
And just based off of that, you put together the list for them.
No kidding. I mean? Okay.
Yeah. And so that's the type of – we have a lot more of those type people. And part of it may be because of the strip mall that we're in. We get a lot more of the casual people that walk in and they go, oh, you can hold books? I didn't know you could do that. Okay.
Gotcha.
And it's something completely foreign to them they didn't grow up with in a comic shop. So a lot of them don't even know that convergence is even happening. A
right.
lot of them, it's just going to be one of those things where they walk in on that Wednesday and they go, what are all these books? I don't understand what's going on here. You know, like Black Vortex. We have people that get Guardians of the Galaxy
but
and
not Yeah, but not X-Men, right?
Right. So we throw in an X-Men book in there and they go, well, why am I getting this X-Men book? You go, well, it's part of the crossover. And they go, I don't really know that I want that, you know,
right.
because they were fans of the movies, so they just get Star-Lord, Rocket Raccoon, and Guardians of the Galaxy, you know?
Right.
And that's a lot of what we're dealing with nowadays. Oh, those types types of people. So if I say, do you want this Justice Society of America book from Convergence? They have no idea who the society is. Why is it called Society and not League?
Right.
They don't know who these characters are, you know.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know what? You know, every comic book store is different. And that's a fascinating take on, you know, how your store works, because it's like a mix of old and new, you know, because you definitely have that like kind of personalized pull list, and even like a real personal touch too from the store staff, which is awesome. Not every store does that. And that's not completely, you know, that's not like typical old school either. That's just, I mean, that's something that's been done that I've seen or heard of, but you know, not at any of the stores I frequent. But that's pretty cool. That's interesting to hear, you know, your store's take on this Convergence thing. Where I currently keep my pull list, the majority of the people that keep their pull list there do it through Comixology. Mm. So the store at least supplies the people who pull it on Comixology, and then, you know, buys a certain number for the rack. Right. And that gives them at least an idea, but they still run into the same thing where something like Edge of Spider-Verse number 2.
Right.
That jumped on people like nobody's business. I knew that I wanted that particular issue for the first appearance of Spider-Gwen, but not everyone knew. And then all of a sudden, now it's in its, what, third, fourth printing or something like that?
Right. And that's one of those books where we try to order that for everybody who gets Amazing Spider-Man. But there are a couple people that get Amazing Spider-Man that just, they didn't want it. They gave it back.
Right.
You know?
And now they regret it.
And we give, if someone says they want a copy of Previews, we'll give them a copy of Previews for free. We also have a stack that we just put out for sale because, I mean, it costs us like $2.50 per copy to buy them for the store. But if a subscriber asks for it, we'll give them a copy, no problem. There's only a couple people, though, that get Previews.
Right.
Most people don't bother because, again, they just go,
it's just
I just
big,
want the Green Lantern stuff.
Big hunk of piece of paper. Big hunk of piece of paper. So, but anyway, that's interesting. Like I said, I'm always, you know, glad to hear your take from the retail side on these big events. Related to this, now that we've seen some of the titles that are coming out in the solicits, have you seen? Well, actually, the May solicits haven't popped up on Comixology yet. But in terms of the Secret Wars titles, do you anticipate something similar? Like all these different titles?
Yeah, because again, with Battle World and a lot of that type of tie-in stuff, where it's like the Old Man Logan books.
Right.
People who read Wolverine related books nowadays are, quite honestly, people who jumped on for Death of Wolverine.
Right.
Those are the people reading it. Are they going to care about Old Man Logan? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They bought Death of Wolverine, and they're buying the Wolverine series, and they bought Life After Logan and Weapon X Project and all those books. It's not something that really appeals to them.
Right. So you're targeting the old school X-Men fan.
Yeah, so you know? It's, again, kind of digging through it and just trying to do a little bit of mind reading with some of these people, because there are a fair number of people we can look at and just say they're going to get two comics for the entire month of April. You know, because they don't care about 90% of the stuff coming out. And
right.
There are going to be people that they just want Secret Wars.
Right.
Like they want the main series, and they don't care about any of the spinoffs for that entire month, even though they might get six or seven books normally during the month, you know.
Smart people.
Well, what are you going to do?
Gotcha. All righty, cool.
But a lot of it is trying to educate them on the stuff that's coming out, and it's really hard to try to explain someone who... You know, they watch the Marvel movies. They watch Avengers and Iron Man and Thor, and they like all those, so they started buying some random Marvel comics. And then you try to explain to them Secret Wars and Battle World and all of this stuff, and you just watch as blood comes out of their ears and their eyes start to gloss over, and they just have no frame of reference for any of this stuff. You know, they just want to come in and get their comic and read their ongoing story, and that's it. You know, so... It's really tough. It's really tough on a lot of this. And the fact that they're both doing it in the same month makes it even harder.
I was going to say, even people in the business don't know what's going on with some of this stuff yet.
So yeah.
I can see trying to explain it to the non-comic book educated person. I'm here, by the way, but y'all can continue doing most of the talking because I always seem to come in and out. So.
Let's see. What else do we want to talk about?
New Infinity Gauntlet series.
Yeah, that started our discussion on this whole crossover, you know, ordering stuff. Just going to talk about You know, there's more Battle World domains being created for Secret Wars. A4, 1602, 90s X-Men, and more are going to be part of different Battle Worlds. Interestingly, I was looking at the Comic Book Resources article. Marville has a Battle World region, but it's not the Bill Gemmis limited series.
It's not.
It's actually Marville will be populated by the Marville babies, the characters that appear on Scotty Young's various variant covers.
Oh, gosh.
So, you know what popped into my mind, right? As soon as I read that was the Muppet Babies theme from back in the day, dude.
Oh, my gosh.
You know you want to play it.
I noticed that Archie is ending. They're going to be doing a new
number
666.
Yes, kind of. You know.
That shows you the new attitude at Archie Comics over the last couple of years.
They're devil worshippers. Is that what it is?
Yes, that's exactly it. So basically, when the new Archie 1 series, it will have a new art style, a modern art style. And the original, classic Archie style will only remain in the Archie Digest comics.
Okay.
So they will make some new stories for the Digest, but for the most part, it's going to be going away. And when you get that new Archie number 1. So something happens in Archie 666 that dooms them all to hell of Digest and brings the new reality of Archie.
Lovely.
Are any of y'all excited or intrigued by the Dark Circle line that starts next week?
No.
The who?
They're redoing all those superhero books that were, like, first they were the, I forget what they call them, the Crusader line for Archie, and then they became the Impact line at DC in the mid-90s.
Really?
And then they came back again as the Crusader line for Archie.
The Flats, the Shield, the Black Hood.
Oh, mercy.
I have an article open that I was reading about, an interview with some of the people involved with that, so figured I'd ask now.
Just maintaining the IP for possible exploitation in Hollywood, right?
Pass.
Yep, same here.
All right, let's see. Oh, variants for Convergence. Let's take a look at this. We got some variant cover stuff.
Wait, Mouse Guard celebrates 10 years with Scotty Young, Mark Buckingham, Dustin Gwynn, Mickey Cloonan, and more? It's been 10 years for Mouse Guard? Are you serious? That's awesome.
And it's what, 4 volumes?
There's been four volumes that does come out in floppy format, you know, individual issue format. But yeah, there's been 4 volumes so far. Oh, and now I guess it's coming back for a 5th one because they're up to Legends of the Guard Volume 3.
All right, so... one thing I did notice while I was doing the orders is these DC Convergence variants. And actually, on some of these books, I ordered the variants instead of the regular covers because I just think they look cooler. They have this classic artwork that's fading into oblivion as the variant cover here.
Fading into oblivion, like Mike Tyson would say? But anyway.
So you've got the classic artwork of these characters just kind of fading off into the side. And on a lot of these, I just think there's something, it's got that pop art. I can't think of the artist's name.
Not Warhol.
No. The guy who would do the comic book panels as huge paintings. Why is this?
Comic book.
The guy did huge paintings, and the paintings were just a single comic book panel, and it was done with all the dots, so it looked like it was the up-close printing. Oh, my gosh, I can't think of... Roy Lichtenstein, that's his name.
There you go.
There we go. Found it. All right.
I would have lost Final Jeopardy I was done. I was like, are you talking about?
Like this panel right here. Like this panel right here that you see. This is a full-size painting.
Right.
And his paintings look like one panel of an old comic book. And that's his kind of pop art style work. And so looking at these Convergence covers makes me think of these pieces that he did, where it's got this close-up of classic artwork fading off into...
Oh my god, Azrael Batman!
Yeah, he's back. Shadow of the Bat. The Shadow of the Bat title is coming.
That's what I was going to ask y'all. I'm pretty much probably won't read any of the Convergence books. I was going to see if any of my co-hosts were going to pick up the slack.
Yeah, I'll read a fair number of them just because I read a lot of DC Comics over the years. Like right here, for instance, this Detective Comics cover, this is the Robin of Earth 2, where Batman died, and Robin grew up and took over. And so I'm familiar with the character. I'm familiar with the old crossovers that DC did with these guys. So some of these characters, I am looking forward to seeing how they're, you know, redone. It's going to be a question, though, of whether or not they're good or if they just feel like really bad, you know, tie-in, cash grab, whatever.
Right.
But for the most part, a lot of these I am looking positively at seeing them appear. It kind of sucks that we're losing the actual real comics.
I feel like this would be my chance to catch up on stuff.
Yeah.
But I will be doing my part for Secret Wars. So.
My question is whether or not are people going to be turned off by this and not read DC books for 2 months, or is Comixology going to have a ton of 99-cent sales and they're going to sell a whole bunch of back issues of some of these characters and some of these storylines?
That's a good question. But then I keep saying this for like every time DC does a gimmick month or whatever they end up doing, like the was it the October or September, whenever it's been. And yeah, 2 months, yeah, at least as someone that's not a diehard DC fan, to me it would be like, hey, 2 months, I don't have to buy anything from them.
Yeah, and that's, again, part of the hard part of placing the orders for this month for the store is trying to figure out when people walk in off the street and want a random Batman book, are they going to buy one of these Batman books, or are they going to, you know, look for something that's part of the regular series of Batman? Are they even going to care about a bunch of these tie-in books? And I don't know. It's difficult.
If I knew if some of these titles were important for the line going, you know, post-convergence, I'd read them. But if they're just a bunch of two-issue-and-done stories, then,
yeah, because we still don't know.
We need to get to reviewing books, don't we?
Yeah, we do here real quick. But we still don't know what's going to happen after Convergence. So we still don't know where these characters are going to be. And, you know, are these old characters coming back? Are we going to see, you know, the pre-50 new characters stick around? Are we going to see pre-crisis characters sticking around? Because if they are, then these books make sense. But if not, then it's going to be tough to see which ones actually are important. So
I think I think this conversation important, you know, that we get this up simply because, you know, it's, you know, we're getting to these, you know, to the Convergence month. It's coming up, and, you know, at least coming from a retail perspective, and then, you know, following that up with the very next month of Secret Wars. So, you know, Secret Wars. So, you know, it's interesting to hear this and, you know, coming at it from the academic perspective that we do, you know, we review these things. We, you know, we're able to, you know, that's what we're doing here on the show, but it's interesting to hear from the collector's perspective and the retail perspective, you know, how we approach these events that are coming up that are really going to throw our monthly collecting and monthly retail kind of throw us all for a loop for a little bit.
Yeah.
So it's an important conversation to have. I'm glad we're having it. And we're going to revisit this topic over the next couple of months anyway, as it gets closer and closer.
Closer and closer.
Yep.
Let me read my Amazon script. Keep our podcast free by shopping at Amazon.com. Visit coldslitherpodcast.com, then click the Keep Our Podcast Free link at the top of the page. From there, scroll down and click on the Amazon link to shop. Purchase items from Amazon.com as you normally would, whether it's books, music, electronics, jewelry, apparel, and much more. For every purchase made on Amazon through our link, Amazon sends Cults of the Podcast Network a payment that helps our listeners at no extra cost to you. Amazon.com through cultsofthepodcast.com. Do it today.
Do it today.
Do it. We ready to review some books?
Let's rock.
All right, what do we got?
Oh, you read a lot.
You talking to me?
Did you not read a lot?
I want to hear about Batman Superman 19.
Oh, I regret reading this.
I don't regret it.
I regret reading it.
It just wasn't that good.
So Greg Pak is trying to introduce a character or try to integrate a character into Superman's Rogues Gallery as Superman's Joker. And I just had trouble figuring out how devious this character really was, or how insane this character really was. I didn't get that sense yet. This seems like the first part of, or at least just another part of this continuing arc that establishes this character as Superman's insane counterpart. So I didn't get that same impact. It involves a Kandorian slash, you know, Kryptonian kind of older villain or pre someone who's predisposed to be a villain who now that Kandor has been liberated from the clutches of Brainiac, kind of establishes himself as a counter to Superman. Whether or not you're convinced that he's as crazy as the Joker, obviously that takes time and you'll see that develop. But for now, I think you would have to read this in connection with the next issue to really see if this character is going to stand up as that type of counter or foil to Superman. So I still think, I would give this book kind of like an incomplete grade, because I think the next issue is going to tell the tale.
I will say I did like the fact that the villain comes across almost as a cult leader in many ways.
Okay.
So he's not just kind of the
crazy guy.
Right. He's not just this evil guy doing, trying to control the world or whatever. He is really unhinged. But the people, he takes control of them. So they do become almost like the mindless slaves to whatever it is he's trying to do, which is something that is difficult for a character like Superman to deal with. You can't punch somebody that's under mind control.
Right, the innocence.
Right. So I did at least appreciate that aspect.
All right, cool.
Yeah, but otherwise, again, 2.5 out of 5 stars, just nothing super fantastic about it.
Right, right, right. How about Justice League 39? It looks like everyone read this?
Yes. The end of the Mesovirus story arc.
All right, so what'd you guys think?
I enjoyed the arc overall, and I liked the Jason Babcock's art in this final edition.
Yeah, I think that's a strong
scene. He got to cut loose a lot.
Yeah, agreed.
He's like their new breakout artist, if he hasn't already broken out.
I liked the interplay with Luther, and just the way everybody treats him as the punching bag. You know, nobody trusts him, nobody likes him, but at the same time that he is kind of the smartest guy, and when it comes to a lot of this medical research and fighting the virus and that kind of stuff, so he's got to be there, but nobody likes him.
Right. Well, what I was going to say is that especially once they incapacitate or Batman is somehow incapacitated, he is the smartest guy in the room.
Right.
So, this definitely gave, at least that part of the story gave Luthor a chance to step up front and center. Obviously, they do remind us all that the Amazovirus is Luthor's own creation. But, it's kind of interesting to see how they all react, having a smart guy in the room that doesn't have their best interests at heart.
I also really like Captain Cold in this, and I love the way Superman and Wonder Woman, they almost treat him like a little kid on a field trip who's hanging out with the big kids. I really kind of want to see Captain Cold become part of the team.
I like that they didn't
disrespect him. We know that's where they're going, right? I'm sorry, Tim, go ahead.
I was saying I like how they didn't disrespect him, though.
Right, like they obviously don't feel like he's on the same level, but at least he seems like a good guy who's doing the right things for the right reason. So they at least trust him as far as that goes. So it's interesting to see how they're playing that character up and where he's going to go, with the team.
I was about to say it doesn't hurt that he's got some exposure on the Flash TV show now.
I also like that, this is in how Forever Evil ended with Luthor being the hero that the public recognized, but now he's getting to take a taste of what it means to be a public hero. So like now he's got his first supervillain with Mezo, someone that is out to kill him. So now he's got to deal with what that the repercussions of that now.
That's an interesting thing, yeah.
Yeah, and I also like that they added the thread of some of the people are keeping their powers even after the virus goes away. So now we are going to have a new crop of heroes and villains. Like they have this excuse to suddenly make new.
Wait, yeah, I was about to say, what do you mean in humans? Like Terra Genesis? What? Terrigen Cloud? What?
I hadn't even thought of that until I read the Oracle show. But yeah, there's a good excuse. Now they can create. It's not like why would they need an excuse to create new people anyway? But
right. But now it's a built-in reason to give somebody, or it's a built-in reason for somebody's power.
Right.
Yeah.
And it gives them an excuse to make a Justice League of Detroit again.
Oh.
Isn't that where Vibe was? Didn't Vibe?
Yeah.
Yep.
Come out of Detroit because Detroit had that. Special field or something like where parademons come out of. That's where they fought Darkseid, right?
Well, that was what part of it was, yeah.
Yeah, and that's why like Detroit has this sensitive area to that Vibe could sense the demons are coming out. What happened to Vibe, by the way?
His miniseries failed, and he disappeared.
Okay. Yeah, he was going to be so important. What happened to Simon Baz?
Yeah, who cares?
Since Geoff Johns likes creating new Green Lanterns. Yeah. Oh, and also going back to Justice League, they teased a future villain, some guy I had to Google, because I had no idea who Fortune. Did I jot his name down? Let's see. Got my notes.
Dominic Fortune, what?
No, there was some guy. Oh, man. Give me a second here.
Now flipping through the book, I'm trying to think of who you're talking about.
Yeah, I'm going. If I pull it up, because I left it on that page on the iPad, because I had to Google who the dude was. Amos Fortune.
Okay.
Who is he?
I don't even remember now. Something, but if you go back to like page 17, when they're talking about, you know, people with powers, they say, you know, new heroes or new villains, and there's a guy sitting behind the office desk.
Oh, I didn't even see that there was a nameplate on his desk. Okay.
Yeah. It's like some guy. I honestly, I don't even remember what the Wikipedia told me about the guy.
You know he's evil because he's smoking a cigarette, so that's your clue that he's going to be a bad guy.
And he's in silhouette.
Right.
And the villain's caption is on his panel.
Right. But new heroes, we're going to get some tubby guy who can shoot electricity out of his fingers.
We're going to get Black Lightning. I'm surprised he hasn't made a new 52 appearance yet, that I know about at least. But, Oh, and we got the return. Speaking of Green Lanterns, we got the return of Hal Jordan.
Yeah, finally back on Earth.
We don't even know how did that New God story end? Did anyone read it? Talk about it? Did we talk about it? Did I miss that? What?
No.
All of a sudden, I was flipping.
Is it over?
Yeah,
it's over.
Apparently,
yeah.
Because now Hal Jordan is back on Earth. Like what?
I still have the third arc to read on that. I kind of stopped for a while and
obviously I stopped too. So remember, it started out so well. We were all like, "Hey, we're on board," and it just fizzled.
Yeah, Dirt tried to suck me into it, and it was just too many tie-ins.
The problem was it started out strong, but then they had to make it cross over into every Green Lantern book, and
over like what 3 months, right?
Yeah, over 3 months. And so you got to a point where it's like the story in Green Lantern Corps is what two people are doing in the span of two panels in one of the other books, so you already know what happens with them later on in the rest of the story. So you're just sitting there going, why am I reading this? I already know what's going to happen, and then kind of move on. So, yeah, I kind of gave up on it. It's one of those things. I have them downloaded on my Comixology. At some point I'll go back and read them, but... just, you know, it's for those days when I have plenty of free time and nothing to do.
One of those days.
Yeah, one of those days.
All right. I guess we can jump to Marvel something.
How about...
Dirt Red Uncanny X-Men 31.
Hey, Dirt. Did you read that too, Tim?
No, not yet, but... See, Dirt.
Well, we won't spoil... I was about to say,
because he says...
Spoil.
His notes say, yes, I actually read it.
That's funny. We won't spoil too much of it then, but it's an interesting... Did you know... Did you have, like, a conflicted feelings about this, Dirt, as you were reading it? Like, wow, they're actually doing this? They're actually using... You know, if you've been reading Uncanny, you know that there's some time travel stuff going on.
Okay. I have not read Uncanny X-Men. In fact, I haven't... I don't know... other than All New X-Men, right. I don't know that I've read an X-Men book since Scott Summers went crazy and lashed out and made his own team.
Right.
So...
What got you to pick up this one?
We had a copy come in the store that was damaged.
Okay.
And so because it was damaged, we had to damage it out, and so it's just going to get pulped. And so I said, well, we've got this comic that we're going to throw away. Maybe I'll sit here and read it. And so that's the only reason why I read this.
Wow.
There was absolutely nothing that made me want to pick it up other than the fact that we were going to throw it away. So
wow.
I decided to read it, and I actually enjoyed it.
Because it was a weirdly satisfying end to a very strange story by Bendis. And, you know, this whole Last Will and Testament of Charles Xavier played out completely contrary to most people's expectations, I think. And, you know, it dealt with this super powerful mutant and just, you know, there's some time travel shenanigans, and it's just a very, you know, kind of a neat way to wrap up the story. But I was very shocked that they were able that they did it this way.
I I took some pleasure in the fact that the issue ended with Scott Summers basically knowing he was wrong.
Yes.
And him basically... Okay, I guess I'll stop there.
But he
ends this issue knowing that what he has done was a mistake. And that's what I have said since day one when he put on the X helmet and went off onto his own. And that was part of the reason why I gave up reading the X-Men stuff. And so the fact that they finally come back around and say, okay, that was not the right thing to do all along, I want to read the next one and see how they follow up.
Interesting.
But yeah, I like the time travel stuff. Of course, it's Bendis, so there's a lot of like little bits of humor mixed in, especially when it comes to the character. I don't think we said who the character is that appears.
No, we didn't.
So this character who comes out of time to be part of the storyline, of course, there's some funny interactions with him.
Yes.
And some of the stuff that happens there. So, yeah.
But you know what's funny? Well, go ahead. Finish up.
Well, I was going to say, overall, since I haven't read any books before this, so I don't know how the story began. I don't know anything about it, but being able to pick up this issue, I could instantly jump into the story. I didn't even read the intro page that has like the recap of everything. I just went straight into the story. I had no problems picking up what happened. I had no problems following the story of what was going on. I had no issues with keeping up with... I didn't know who this character was, but by what she did, I could obviously tell that she was much more powerful than anyone else they've had on their team. And it was just real easy to get into and real easy to read. And I think, you know, the fact that you can jump in technically at the end of the story and have no problem getting into it and reading it is actually a testament to how well done it is. Yeah,
I'm inclined to agree with you. I would just say that the time travel aspect of this story felt a lot more classic Marvel than some of the time travel that we've seen recently. And, you know, it was just a very, you know, kind of an old school way of using time travel. I'll just leave it at that.
Okay.
You know, yeah. I don't want to spoil too much of it. That was my take on it.
Yeah. Well, and just to throw a point on that, you got a story where there was time travel and they did things to affect the future, but you didn't have a massive butterfly effect situation, you know?
I think we will, because I think they teased that, but...
Well, but the point is, they didn't, you know, it's not Back to the Future 2, where suddenly Biff runs a casino,
correct,
and the whole world is in darkness, and,
right,
you know, it's like...
No spoiler alert on that one, people.
Right, they went back and they changed some stuff, and the rest of the world seems fine, it's just this one small thing has changed in the present.
Right.
And I appreciate the time travel stories that can do that and not have to suddenly be like, oh my gosh, they stopped a car in traffic in 1967 and now aliens have taken over planet Earth, you know?
Right. Gotcha.
Ultron didn't find a way to take over the planet because they traveled.
Exactly. All right. What else did you guys read that I read? How about Miles Morales Ultimate Spider-Man number 10?
Oh yeah, good issue.
This one better than the last two?
In the sense that it took the story forward.
Yeah,
it takes place in the present and it's not a flashback.
Right.
Yeah.
They actually hit on some of the plot points, like his father has to go to the school and try to explain why Miles has disappeared recently and hasn't been a student, and you know some of that real world stuff that you have to take care of when you're superheroing. Where you kind of think like, oh, well, you know, he missed school for a while. How are they going to take care of that? Well, they actually, you know, answer some of those types of questions in this. The one thing, though, that I felt was a little overdone is they have three pages of a conversation on a rooftop with Cloak and Dagger and Spider-Man talking about his girlfriend.
I actually enjoyed that. It's funny that you mentioned that. That was probably one of the highlights of the issue to me, simply because it was Cloak and Dagger coming back off of the travesty that was the new – what did they call it? The New Ultimates?
Yeah, the all-new Ultimates.
The all-new Ultimates. Oh, jeez. Yeah. The all-new Ultimates. It was nice to see them back. I was glad to see them back. And it's still – and it's nice to see them as, you know, real peers to Miles. They're true peers. So, you know, I hate to say this, but they're not going to have, like, the classic superhero banter. They're going to talk about stuff like this. So I thought that was very – that did a lot for the characters for me.
See, for me, it was the page directly after that where his roommate, Genki, is dancing in his underwear.
what song was like he that. Dancing to? I don't even know.
I don't know. It's, the lyrics are, do you want to touch? Do you want to touch?
Yeah, now it's not Google. Here, Google.
I don't know what that song. It's probably like a Lady Gaga or something.
Oh,
but I don't,
God.
I have no idea.
That is funny. That is funny. Anybody on, you know, everybody watching and listening, you know, if you can help us out with that.
There are people that are going to be like, you don't know that song. I can't believe it.
I love
it. Rage.
I love it. I love it. That's funny.
But anyway, yeah, it brought the story back to modern time and it pushed it forward. And so I appreciated that. I did enjoy it a lot more. The fact that they move things along. And again, the artwork's beautiful. I mean, there's nothing more you can say about David Marquez. It's just...
Listen, Marquez, I spoke to Marquez at Special Edition last year, and Marquez told me specifically that he has passed up, and I think I've mentioned this on the show before, Marquez has told me that he has passed up certain opportunities. He didn't say what exactly. I didn't really want to press him on it, but he's passed up on certain opportunities to stay on the Miles Morales book and to keep up, you know, and to keep telling these stories because he's enjoying it. And I give him a ton of credit. He is, I think he's one of Marvel's young guns, but he's definitely one of their... if you're not reading this, a best-kept secret at Marvel right now.
Yeah, I've heard that in a couple of years, too. I'm actually interested with the Ultimate Universe ending and Miles Morales, the Ultimate Spider-Man, more than likely ending. What would be his next assignment?
Right. That's interesting. That's interesting. So, all right, so that's that. How about Silk? We'll stay in the Spidey Spider-Verse. Silk number one, spinning straight out of the events of Spider-Verse. Tim, I think you read this.
I did. Let me pull up my notes. I said it was a nice, fun opening issue. Enjoyed it more than I thought I would. And I like the youthful art from Stacy Lee, Robbie Thompson. I believe this is his first comic book writing gig, and he did a nice, admirable job. Carved out a nice story for Cindy Moon. I like the flashbacks to her pre-bunker Cindy and post-bunker Cindy as she tries to find her family.
Right.
I thought she was working for the Daily Bugle, but she's working for whatever that new news
company. The Fact Channel, I think it is.
Yeah, that they created. So, and I like that they're going to be utilizing a Spider-Man villain who I believe should have been getting more limelight anyway, but I'll keep that to myself because that would be spoiling who it is.
Yes, yes, yes. I was about to say, I will ring the bell, but we won't talk about it. I enjoyed this book, too. I was definitely surprised at how much I enjoyed it. You know, there is a nice twist on her motivation as a character. You know, having been locked up in this bunker for 10 years, how does she reacclimate, or how does she, you know, kind of readjust to life in the modern world? She has this great line, you know, she basically says, and I'm not spoiling anything, she says, "What's Twitter?" And I'm like, wow, you know. And it comes off so, it's written so well that I didn't even, you know, think twice about laughing
at that. I like how the writers nowadays take, like, things you see, like, said on social media or, like, stuff the young kids say and put it in their books. Like, Cynthia kept saying the asking for a friend statement.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And am I right?
Yeah. Right.
So yeah, like, ultimately, I was pleasantly surprised by this as well. And this is a sleeper pick for a Click of the Week for me.
Let's see. What else can we go
to? Did anybody read Ms. Marvel?
I did.
And?
Well, Ms. Marvel number 12, I think it is,
Guest
stars Loki in it this week. And it was an interesting read. I don't know if it's one of the stronger issues. It was definitely Valentine's Day themed. You could see from the cover, it's not spoiling anything when I say that. You know, there's the development of a relationship impossible, the development of a possible relationship that's been brewing in the pages of Ms. Marvel. Loki's interaction here is very interesting if you read Loki, Agent of Asgard, number whatever it is this week. I read that. I don't even know if I had a chance to put it on my list this week. But it's interesting. They put on the first page that these events take place prior to the events of Axis. And that's an important thing to remember because of what's happened to Loki since.
Hmm.
he's still kind of playing a, you know, he's definitely much more mischievous than, you know, what he's come off to be or has been revealed to be in the pages of the Loki book recently. Listen, this is
that
kind
came
of
out
like
this week too, didn't it?
Yes, it did.
Yes, Damn, too much stuff came out this week from Marvel. Actually did like a count Tuesday, I think, afternoon of like all the Marvel books I wanted to read, and it was like 16, I think.
Yeah. It's a lot. My physical pull list this week is pretty heavy. But very quickly, just regarding Ms. Marvel, it was just a very, you know, it was a nice little one and done type issue with the guest star. I guess the biggest reason for this book is to advance Kamala Khan's personal story as a, you know, like you know, providing her with a possible love interest going forward. So that's interesting and that's important for the character's development going forward. But you know, in the grand scheme of things, in terms of you know, her role as the protector of Jersey City, doesn't really advance anything. But you know, it's a cute issue.
So Axis happens after Valentine's Day.
I guess. Maybe this is Valentine's Day 2014.
Speaking of female superheroes, how was the ending of She-Hulk?
Oh, well, let me hit Loki, agent of Asgard, real quick. I'm sorry to backtrack. I will hit She-Hulk also. This is another sleeper pick for my click of the week this week. This was a great, great kind of emotional story this week or this month, because Loki, and I wasn't completely familiar with the story. I had not been reading the Loki books lately. I'd kind of missed out on what happened to Kid Loki and how we got to this kind of teenage Loki. And there's a lot of drama involved with it. And there's just a lot of, you know, kind of interesting things that come up in this issue that kind of, you know, that kind of foreshadow where Loki ends up and how he gets to be a character, I guess a version of Loki, kind of playing on Jason Aaron's Thor God of Thunder run, where you had like young Loki, young Thor, current Avengers Thor, and then old King Thor. So we've got something similar in here where we've got the current teenage Loki and we have a King Loki that's playing a role in Asgardia. So I don't want to spoil too much about it, and I'm not as familiar with the story as I could be to really tell everyone about it and just spoil the whole thing. But this book was very, very, I thought, well done. I thought that Al Ewing does a phenomenal job just telling the story that's in this issue. You know, there's a lot of impactful dialogue in this, and Lee Garbett does a great, you know, just does great art on this. Again, this is another sleeper click of the week pick for me. And you were asking about She-Hulk number 12. I was looking forward to this issue. I wanted to see this run of She-Hulk end well. I've been a fan of Charles Soule's storytelling on this, but I felt like this issue, I guess because we know that it's not the end of the She-Hulk story in Marvel, there's no real finality to this. It's, you know, the show goes on, the work goes on. The story that is concluded in this is the second part of a story that, or maybe the third part of the story that explains what this blue file is, and it just wasn't the most satisfying resolution to that story. You know, the build up to that blue file and to see it kind of go away for a while was great, but then, you know, finally finding out what the blue file was all about was just kind of a, I don't want to say let down, but, you know, you'd have to read it. Like I said, I really don't want to spoil it. I was kind of let down by the resolution of the blue file story. But I can tell you that this is a spoiler alert, so I'm going to ring the bell. And when I get the cursor over the bell, it'll ring. There you go. We're going to likely see She-Hulk pop up in another Charles Soule written book that is currently published by Marvel. And it's not Wolverine. So I think you figured out which one it might be.
What? Say it one more time.
We're going to see She-Hulk pop up in a Charles Soule scripted book at Marvel that's not Wolverine's.
Hmm.
All right. There's not that many to choose from. So, yeah,
unless it's an unannounced book that he has.
No. It's currently published.
Yeah.
It's currently published. It's basically the last page of She-Hulk number 12 kind of teased that. So I think that's what we'll be heard next.
Okay.
And, but like I said, I was disappointed with the resolution of the story of the Blue File. Not the strongest ending to the run, but I think it's because, you know, we all know that She-Hulk is, obviously she's in, she makes a guest appearance in Uncanny X-Men 31. She's been in that storyline with the Last Will and Testament of Charles Xavier. But I didn't think it was the strongest issue in Charles Soule's run on She-Hulk.
Did it feel like it wasn't as strong because he had to wrap it up quickly, like he didn't have time to flesh out the story, or just drop the ball?
I don't know about drop the ball per se. I just don't think it was the best way to end this, you know, the run. I read there's a letter in the back of the issue from Charles Soule to the readers, and it says in the letter, he states in the letter that this is the story that he had pitched. And I wonder if it's just the D or E or F list character that he used to kind of wrap up the story of the Blue File that just, you know, caused it to not resonate with me. Maybe that's what it is.
Hmm.
You know, maybe it wasn't the execution as much as just the story wasn't as interesting to me as the build up was to this Blue File, this mysterious Blue File. But, listen, if this is the story he wanted to tell, it's great. You know, I like the run overall. I just don't think this was the strongest issue.
All right.
You know what I will talk about, though? Did anyone read Silver Surfer number 9? Has anyone been reading Silver Surfer here except me?
No.
This has been so awesome with Dawn Green. Finding out, you know, a little spoiler alert. But it's on the cover. And we talked about this the last issue last month. Dawn Greenwood has finally discovered what Norrin Radd / the Silver Surfer was, not in a past life, but in a past job. And now we have the World Eater, Galactus, showing up and, you know, causing all sorts of ruckus at this world where the last survivors of these worlds that Galactus has devoured have come to take refuge. You know, this is where the Silver Surfer and Dawn Greenwood have come to stop in the middle of space, and all of a sudden, guess who shows up? Big Purple. And, you know, all sorts of stuff ensue. There is a cliffhanger in this I don't want to spoil. It does involve the Power Cosmic. It does involve Galactus. We don't know where that's going, but it's a cause enough to read the next issue. I like this. It's about time that Dawn Greenwood understood what the Silver Surfer was. You know, she's introduced as kind of like this, I don't want to say naive character, but she's definitely become far more informed as to what the Silver Surfer is. And, you know, it's an interesting way to introduce, you know, new readers to the Silver Surfer's backstory. Now, I understand most readers of this series aren't going to be foreign to the Silver Surfer concept and to the Silver Surfer's history, but, you know, there's always going to be somebody new that reads it, so it's an interesting way to review the Surfer's history as a character and to introduce that to, you know, a new generation and a new set of readers. There are a couple of really, really phenomenally done pages and action sequences by Allred and colored by Laura Allred on this that are just really good. I know the Allred's art is not for everybody. It's a lot like Javier Pulido, you know, on She-Hulk, but it's really well done. I can't recommend this issue enough because it's just that well done. A not-so-sleeper candidate for Click of the Week for me.
Do you have any idea how Galactus got back to the 616 universe?
No.
Here in Silver.
I know. No.
Incursions.
Exactly. I don't know how. It's funny that you mentioned that because it was in the back of my mind. Like, oh, wait, how did we get here from?
Doesn't he show up somewhere else too, though?
Right. He was like trapped in the Ultimate Universe at some point. Or
I'm thinking about the future issues of King Thor in the future and Thor: God of Thunder when he was fighting King Thor in the future, but since that took place in the future, that could be explained away.
Right. And Guardians 3000 has, I think...
The Hunger.
The Old Hunger, correct. Yeah. And I think that's Galactus also. But that's in the future as well, I think. So, But in terms of Galactus in the here and now, yeah, I think the last time we saw Galactus in the somewhat here and now was when he was trying to devour the ultimate Earth, right?
All right. So according to Wikipedia, it's an all-new Invaders number 5. Okay. In All New Invaders number 5, following an incident where the Eternal known as Icarus is brainwashed by the Kree using a device called the God's Whisperer, he swears vengeance on his would-be captors.
Right.
With the help from Arcus, Icarus and his fellow Eternals find the comatose Galactus floating in the end zone and bring him back to Earth 616.
Touchdown!
There
so All New Invaders number 5 is how Galactus gets back to the 616.
Oh, that's probably when I stopped reading Invaders for a little while, too.
Well, I wouldn't even remember Galactus being involved in the
All New Invaders. I think four ended with like the cliffhanger of like of Galactus being on the last page that like got everyone excited. But I chose to stop reading after that.
I mean, I read it after that, but I might have missed a couple of those issues. You know, when they were dealing with the whole that horn that manipulated gods and stuff. So
tell us about Batman and Robin 39. Someone that read it.
Oh, it was fun.
I think you were the only one, Dirt.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, because you guys both forgot about it.
Yeah. Well, I didn't forget about it. I just didn't get to it. Go ahead.
Forgot about it. All right. So Robin, of course, has superpowers, and being the impulsive young teenager that he is, he decides he's going to go rampant on Gotham City and teach the villains that they have a new superhero to worry about. And so with his ultra display of powers, of course, Bruce is disapproving and decides he's got to teach him, you know, respect and restraint and keep him from going off the deep end. So he runs him through a gauntlet of tests, and what he finds is that not only is Robin indestructible, apparently, but he also doesn't feel any pain, period. So nothing is causing him any physical pain, and it's starting to divorce him from reality in a way. And so he's starting to see that there's a psychological problem that's coming with the fact that he has these powers and he's going crazy. And he decides that what he needs to do is basically start treating him like he is more of an adult and less of a child. And so he starts taking him on a Justice League run. And so the Justice League has a call. There's something going on. He takes him up to the Watchtower and decides that he's going to be part of the team. So instead of leaving him behind, you know, because he is a little kid, he just decides now he's got to, you know, start treating him differently. And he's going to take him on this Justice League mission. So this issue is much more of him you know, trying to struggle not only with the fact that he has these powers, but it's also going to lead to these psychological issues that he's got to deal with. And being the father who cares for his son, he's trying to figure out the best way to do that, you know, without making him go totally crazy in the process. So I like the developments of the character. I really like Damian. And I just like the way that, you know, Damian's been treated the last couple of years, making him much more of a likable character.
And I was going to say that.
The way they've done this issue is you really start to actually feel bad for him because, you know, initially the idea is he has these powers, so it's great for him. He can cut loose as a kid, but then you start to realize that there are these other problems associated with it, and now, you know, you really have a lot of empathy for him. So it's another really good job on the book, something I really enjoyed, and, you know, people who are fans of Batman and Damian really need to pay attention to this series because this is the book that really is putting their stamp on the whole relationship between them and, you know, really making the importance of how the two of them work together. It's a possible click of the week for me as well.
Nice.
I need to figure out what my clicks of the week are.
All right, you want to do rapid fire?
Yeah.
All right, let's get through this. I know you read All New Captain America number 4.
I said it was, art is nice.
Yeah. Now, in terms of the story, I'm not so keen on this. I'm not convinced by Remender.
I mean, nothing really happens.
I think he's trying to sell to us that Sam Wilson really is a worthy successor to Cap. And I think he is. It's just that I think he's a really good Falcon. He doesn't have to be Cap. But, you know, I feel like this could be so much better if they were just doing a solo solo Falcon book or something.
Yeah, I don't know.
All right.
Like, I tried to think of, like, what could I talk about from this issue, like, besides the art. I did like finding the different areas for the different bombs that Hydra plans on dropping.
Uh-huh.
Cap gets in, two or three different fights in this issue.
Right.
Barely
escapes.
There's
a lot of fighting.
Escapes two out of three of them.
Right.
And I like the inclusion of Misty Knight.
Yeah, that's cool. It's nice to see Armadillo. No spoilers here. He's on the cover. But yeah, like I said, the art is nice, but the story, I'm still not convinced by Remender. I don't know how much longer I'm going to stick with this. I love the character of Captain America. I just think that Falcon is great as Falcon. He doesn't necessarily have to be Cap. I mean, there's a reason why the Winter Soldier is back to being the Winter Soldier, because he's a great character as the Winter Soldier. Although I'm not a fan of the Bucky Barnes Winter Soldier book right now. I also see that you read Avengers World number 17.
Yeah, that was a nice little simple issue of showing how the story of Smasher and Cannonball's child and their relationship.
Right. I was glad to see this. Would you have rather read this in chronological order as opposed to this kind of weird flashback as to how that all happened?
Not really. Didn't affect me too much.
Okay, because I have the opposite opinion. I think I would have rather read this story within that continuity, within that sequence of events, so that I wouldn't have been taken so far out of sequence and just be really confused as to how did we get here. You know, maybe that's one of the symptoms of like Hickman's storytelling. You know, kind of taking us out and like throwing us right into the future, and we see what has happened, but we don't know how we get there. And then, you know, later on, the pieces get filled in. I think I would have rather have read this issue back then to understand how we got to this point.
Do you feel like you don't care as much because it's going back and telling you something that you've already seen what happens afterwards?
No, but I think that I appreciate it more now, but I think I would have just enjoyed it reading it in sequence more. I think it's not that I care less, it's that I think I would have enjoyed it more.
All right. You were speaking of Bucky Barnes
yes.
as a character you like as the Winter Soldier. Well, you should read Black Widow because
I did read Black Widow.
He is the Winter Soldier in this book. I actually caught up on Black Widow since the last issue came out. I went back because it is a Nathan Edmondson book.
Yes.
I felt the need to because I love Punisher so much. I like Deathlock. Figured
well, you sold
well.
Me on two of the three Edmondson books. I'm still not on Deathlock, but you know I've caught up. I've caught up my physical run on the new Punisher book,
mm-hmm.
but I'm still looking for back issues of Black Widow.
Well, on Black Widow, she has come into. You know, what was supposed to be the final confrontation with Chaos, the group
right.
that's been giving her all these problems, and of course they're one step ahead of her. And so they are going to make their escape when Winter Soldier appears to help her out, to help try to stop them from getting away. And what you find is there's a mysterious leader, and this mysterious leader is someone... I have no idea who this is. I don't know if you have any idea who this
No.
mysterious leader is. Apparently someone who comes out of nowhere, but is very powerful.
Right.
And there is a real kind of Bond villain vibe going on to this guy. Even though he is superpowered in the Marvel Universe, you do get that sense of the way that they have disregard even for their own people within their own villainous group.
Right.
And we also see that Chaos has their own, if you want to call them superpowered assassins or yeah,
yes.
whatever. And so it was neat to see that. I just assumed that was one person, but we see that it's actually multiple people.
Right. I think they were just wearing cool suits.
Yeah, well, they have like Predator invisibility
right.
cloaks, basically.
Right.
And so, you know, she has to fight invisible people, which how do you do that?
Right.
You know? So that was interesting as well.
Right. And what was funny about that is where, spoiler alert, that is where we get the appearance of, or the reappearance of Winter Soldier within, in the context of a Black Widow story. And I don't know if this is the first time we've seen them together since they ended the last Winter Soldier run.
Well, they were together in Black Widow earlier on in the run.
Okay.
She's on a train, and he makes an appearance while she's trying to track somebody down on a moving train. So.
Okay, maybe that's an issue that I've missed, and I need to
yeah. But, you know, reading this, reading Deathlok, reading Punisher, you know, I've seen some of the problems with the Winter Soldier book, and I wish that Winter Soldier book would end and Nathan Edmondson would just do a Winter Soldier book.
What did I tell you? He has to have all the gun-toting Marvel characters.
He does.
Yeah, I wish he was doing Winter Soldier instead of this. Well, not instead of what he's already doing, but included.
Yeah.
Yeah. Give him another book and let it be Winter Soldier and just tie them all together.
We should start a Twitter petition. We really
all his books are his books are already tied together as it is. So.
Exactly.
So I'll go to
Domino
his
Domino has been in, what, 2 to 3?
Yeah, Deathlok is the other book that came out this week from him, and Domino was in this one. At the end of the last issue, Domino appears and shoots Deathlok in the head, shoots him point blank, and leaves him for dead, assuming that he's gone. But instead, what happens is, because of the technology within him, he doesn't die, he reboots. And the problem is that he's taken to the hospital because they think, of course, he's going to be critical. He needs to be operated on. And they find all this crazy technology within him. And it grabs the eye of Tony Stark because Tony Stark wants to know who has this kind of technology and where does it come from, because it's unlike any other technology he's seen. And he's even willing to say that it's almost as good as his own. So what we're finding here in Deathlok is that there's a significant change that's made to the character because of this reboot that happens because of his massive injuries here. And it will change the book ongoing. It looked like last time what was going to happen is the book was going to change because the character got killed off and someone was going to have to take his place. What we find instead is that he's being rebooted, and because he's being rebooted, there's a change that's happening to his personality, I guess we'll say, that is going to change the relationship between him and his controllers from here on out. So we do get a massive shift. It's just not the one that we thought we were going to get, but it's a really good one. And this is the other candidate I have for Click of the Week I have to decide between.
Nice. Deathlok of all issues.
And as I said, only my last rapid review is Legendary Star-Lord number 9, the next edition in the Black Vortex saga. All you need to know is fight, mince, and repeat.
No kidding.
I didn't even bother.
No kidding.
Yeah, I'm going to read the whole thing, but it's not so far. Just which, when I saw how many parts were going to be included in this, I knew this is what it was going to be, but I'm already reading all these books anyway, so
yeah.
It's a good one.
Gotcha. Yeah, I didn't even want to read this, to be perfectly honest. I don't care enough about this Black Vortex storyline to even read this. I'll just, I'll read the next issue of the books that I normally read. My last rapid fire review is going to be, I guess I'll use Iron Fist Living Weapon number 9. And this is another candidate for Click of the Week for me. I've got a lot of candidates this week. This is so, so good. I cannot recommend this enough for anyone that is an Iron Fist fan. Yes, Kari Andrews' story is a little wonky. Yes, some of his fight choreography is a little, wacky. But, overall, it's such a great package. It's such a fun story. This is a finite story. If I've read correctly in the solicits, this run is going to end in the 12th issue, and we're on issue number 9. So we still have 3 more issues to go to finish telling this story. But in all honesty, this is such a great book. The art is so, in this issue, the art is so easy to follow. The layouts are crisp. I had a lot of fun reading this book. I cannot recommend this story enough for anyone who's a fan of Iron Fist or just, cool kung fu stuff in general.
All right, I've got one rapid review to throw in then. On the pile, the new issue of Letter 44
already
came out this week. Why don't I have it sitting right here? Where'd the cover go? I've lost it. I don't know what happened to it. I swear, I've got it here somewhere. trust me on this. There it goes. There we go. Woo. All right. This is another Charles Soule book. This was fine. The problem is it's a flashback issue. So what we've been dealing with in the main story is all this stuff happening out in outer space, and you've got these massive political machinations happening on Earth that may overthrow the President of the United States, and you've got war breaking out, and a nuke going off in the Middle East, and a satellite blasting part of Germany, and all this stuff going on, and then this issue is a flashback to how these two characters met and why they are such good friends. So it's kind of a letdown just for the fact that it feels like it's just there to stretch out the story a little bit, you know, and just here's one more issue before we have to get, you know, to the end of the story. Like, they're just trying to keep it going. So I was a little let down by the fact that we didn't really get anywhere with the story. It was well written, but it's just not what I want in this book, right? So a little disappointed.
Gotcha. All right.
Picks of the week.
Man, this is going to be tough for me. I got a lot of books I read this week that I had a lot of fun reading.
Yeah, you've got a big list to pull from.
Yeah, seriously.
Both of you do, actually. Oh, I can get mine out of the way. Mine's going to be Justice League number 39.
Oh, nice. Really? A DC book?
A DC book.
What?
Like I said, by Sunday night, I'll have read all the probably the good Marvel books. That probably would have been in contention, but at least as far as the Marvel books I read so far, the only other one that was up there was maybe Silk number one.
Mm.
So,
since Roddy Cat's not here, I'm going to pick for him. I'm going to say he picks Mega Man number 46.
Wait, did he return? Wait, hold on.
He didn't have one. He said
no, he didn't have one.
Oh,
he
I
didn't
see
have one. So I'm going to give him Mega Man 46 because it's Mega Man. And Mega Man's cool.
Really?
but as far as I'm concerned, oh man.
Yeah, it's a tough one this week. I read a lot of fun books this week.
I'm gonna go with Batman and Robin 39.
Okay.
Just because I really like the interplay with the characters. The father-son storyline is something that you don't expect from Batman mm-hmm. being as hard and grizzled as he is, and the way that they make Damian into an empathetic character is really just fascinating.
And surprise, surprise, surprise for me, as a longtime reader of Uncanny X-Men, I have been so disappointed in the directions of these of the book and of the X-Men in general. Yes, you've put up my surprise click of the week pick this week, Uncanny X-Men number 31. You know, and if anyone is interested, if you're just tuning into the show, if you just fast forwarded to this point in the podcast, there's always someone that does that. I'm fond. I love when Classic throws us in on Classic Team Up. The shout out to Classic Team Up on the Cults of the Podcast Network. If you fast forward to this point, go back and listen to our discussion on Uncanny X-Men number 31, and you'll find out why this is my click of the week this week. Surprised that I had this much fun reading an issue of Uncanny X-Men from this current run. So this is my click of the week pick this week.
It's also surprising because I actually read it and also enjoyed it.
Doubly so. Yeah. There you go.
What kind of crazy world are we living in? I read Uncanny and enjoy it, and Tim reads Justice League and enjoys it.
Right. And I actually made it a click of the week for me, so come on.
Dogs and cats living.
I've been enjoying Justice League, actually. Yeah.
So there you go.
That's funny. Alrighty.
Alright, want to thank everyone for tuning in to tonight's episode. Big round of applause for yourselves. Follow us on our individual Twitter accounts. I'm at TimDLGG98 and at TheClickNation. Dirt is at PCN_Dirt. And go to his website, PopCultureNetwork.com.
Yay!
Yes.
I'm up.
Agent 70 is at Agent_70.
Chang Chang.
Roddy Cat is at Roddy Cat and at News Nerds Need. And with that is tonight's episode. We'll be back next week, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Subscribe to youtube.com/TheClickNation, and you will be kept up to date on all episodes, and you'll never miss out. We are the Comic Book Chronicles, and we are signing off.
Hey!